Now, folks, from time to time, we like to go back into the archives and go back to interviews that we've done with some of our guests. And this morning, we're going to listen back to a gentleman called Aidan White. Aidan was in about, I'd say about 3 years ago. And he came up, his name came up during the week, and we said, right, let's listen back to Aidan. Aidan's story could be anyone's story. So I hope you enjoy this.
Morning, Joel.
Now, Aidan, I suppose we should start from your early years growing up in rural Ireland. Whereabouts was that?
I lived in a small village about roughly about 10 or 12 miles from Mullingar, and I was born on a small farm. I was the second youngest of four boys and two girls. And and life was good back then, but it was very different from what it is in modern days. I mean, just as an example, the local national school was 3 miles away, so we walked 3 miles to school and 3 miles back.
3 miles back, yeah.
And no buses or cars then.
Mm-hmm.
Used to go to Mass on a Sunday in a horse and trap.
Right.
And things were different then.
Things were different
but,
then.
But
when you say it was a small farm, many acres were.
There was a lot of bogland attached to it, 100 or 200 acres, which was practically no use really,
for
other than to cut turf on.
Yeah.
And people would rent what they call banks of turf to cut every year from my parents. But it was different. But I mean, we never went hungry, Joe, because we grew our own vegetables and all kinds of things, and we had hens and ducks and the usual things.
The usual things you would have around
mix
the farm
on a small farm. So
yeah,
whatever else we had, we had, and we had no television around like that, and we had no electricity either. I mean, I remember there was a thing called the Rural Electrification Scheme, which came in the 60s, Ireland, but before then we had no electricity. I can go back as far as, my memory goes back to about 1950, I remember.
Mm.
And light was provided by what we call tilly lamps, which were pressurized paraffin lamps and stuff like that. And we lived in a thatched house. And I remember one story my mother used to tell me, that in there was a huge storm in Ireland in 1847, and the roof of the house moved a foot.
Nice.
But it didn't fall or anything like that, because the roof was constructed of what they called a bog oak. There were no nails in it. It was all wooden pegs, and the walls of the house were probably 3 or 4 feet thick.
Mm-hmm.
And it was.
It was tough. And to people who were listening in, that, you know, a flick of a switch, hot water.
Oh, yeah.
Hot water for you then?
Well, you boiled it. Hot water. And
you cooked on the fire?
The bath in front of the fire when we were young. And, there was no running water then. It was hard times. But
you didn't know any better, because that's the way it was.
You didn't know any better. You had no expectation. But, I mean, it was a great community. I mean, there were about 8 houses in our locality.
Mm-hmm.
And I know on things like on a Sunday, we would go out and we had the makings of 2 teams from all our neighbours, kids and fathers and whatnots. And it was great fun, really, back in those days, Joe. You know, there was a great community spirit. And I mean, when harvest time came around, everyone went to everyone else's farm and helped out.
Yeah.
If you were short of vegetables at any time of the year, you went up the road and got them from somebody that had them, or they came down to you when you had them and they didn't have them.
Yeah.
You know, so it was, but there were unbelievable characters down there.
Mm.
I'll give you just a small example, and I won't bore you with this.
Go
was
ahead.
A guy who, without putting any finesse on it, was a ferocious liar, but he was a witty liar. And I remember when we were kids, he told us a story. He was coming home one night on the bicycle, and he had a prolific shooter, and he had a double-barreled shotgun, he said, and he heard these geese flying overhead, and he said, without getting down off the bike, he fired this gun up into the air, which is an impossibility, but however, and he could hear a couple of birds falling, he said, that he had shot.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, but before I could get to where the birds had come down, he said a fox had taken them, and he couldn't. And he would tell you stories like that, regale everybody, and one story madder than the next. But he was a character. There were loads of characters like that. There was another oldish guy who was an ex-British Army man, and he was fond of a drop. And back in 1954, we were cut off from the local village because of flooding, and my dad and some of the locals used to go over to the village in a boat to bring vegetables and groceries and whatever was needed for all the houses there. But this guy was very fond of a drink, and he's quite elderly, so he went over in his own boat and imbibed in the local hostelry. And the next morning he wasn't to be seen anywhere, but so they went down to the shore of the lake, and he was actually frozen in the boat, and the only thing that had kept him alive was that he was fond of brandy. So while he might have been frozen in the boat, he was okay.
He was warm.
So there were characters like that that we had down there. It was really hilarious.
Very good. Very good.
You know, so.
When you went to secondary school, just reading up on some of your notes, that was a bit of a distance for you to travel.
Yeah, we cycled 24 miles a day, 12 miles to Mullingar, to Christian Brothers School in Mullingar, and 12 miles back. It was tough, Joe, you know. It was very difficult time that we lived in then.
Would have been like, you're talking about like leaving your house. If you were in at, say, 9 o'clock, you were probably leaving your house maybe a little before 8 o'clock or whatever.
About a quarter to eight we used to leave, and hopefully get in time. But it was very tough because there was a kind of hilly terrain between us and Mullingar, and it was one of the hills you couldn't actually cycle up. It was so high you just had to walk up the hill.
Yeah, grand when you were coming back.
It was great when we were coming. It was dangerous because we used to put down a bit of speed there when we were coming back. It was tough, but yeah.
And did you have lights on the bike and that type of stuff?
No, nothing like that. I mean, no lights on the road, no lights on the bike, nothing. You know,
so
it would be nearly dark in the wintertime when you.
It would be.
Home.
I was just thinking that,
particularly if you had to stay back and play a football match or something like that, and you know, it was dark.
Dark, yeah.
Ah, yeah, we managed. We survived. You know. So when I finished that.
How long were you in the secondary school for?
I was 4 years in the secondary school.
Yeah.
And but it was a very difficult job because we were going from the country, and that particular school was an all-Irish school.
Right.
So we were struggling there. Everything was done through Irish.
Right.
Everything. We only did English as a subject. So it was tough, it was a struggle. I didn't enjoy it, to be quite honest with you.
It was were you trying to get the grip? Was it the Irish language itself?
I would speak a bit of Irish now, a very small bit, but I get it difficult to understand. There's so many different dialects of language that it's difficult to understand anyway.
Yeah.
But it was tough, but I got through it anyway. And when I finished there then, there were four or five of us at home, so there was never going to be a living on the farm for us, so it was look around and see where you could get a job. And I went as a young fella to Dublin, and I worked in the license trade there as a lounge boy in what was Searson's of Baggot Street then, and stayed there for a few years. And then I just decided I wanted to go to England because there was nothing here.
Yeah, before we get into your travels across the water there, I'm just going to go back to your secondary school days. Was there any particular... the Irish was a no-no, because you were taught everything in Irish. Did that affect your enjoyment of being in school? Was there any subject you liked that...
I loved history.
History.
And I loved geography.
Yeah.
But that was about it. I didn't particularly enjoy anything else there, but I did that. And the sports, of course, they were very big into sports. I enjoyed that as well.
Yeah. I don't know whether you can hear that or not. It's like a train going through the studio here. But it's a pity, going back to what you're saying, I'm not knocking the Irish here, but I went to the Christian Brothers in Donnycarney, and like a lot of guys in Dublin and elsewhere, the Irish was hard to grasp. And when we finished there, I went on up to Plunkett's in Whitehall, and we were one of the first to go in 1967. Okay. And give me age away there. But the teacher we had, the Irish teacher that we had, he was from Donegal. And that totally threw us, because we were used to one dialect, and now we were listening to the Donegal dialect, which it kind of, you say,
coincidentally, Joe, it's strange you say that, because our Irish teacher was a Mr. Coll from Donegal as well.
Right.
It was difficult.
That's it.
It was very difficult.
When you went into working the, came up to Dublin, and you were working in the Saracens in Bagot Street.
Saracens in Bagot Street.
It was tough going.
It was very tough going, because it was a very, very upmarket pub that, and it was, the floor was all carpet and that, and it's very, very hard work walking on carpet all day long. Your feet would be very sore. And next morning when you get out of bed, you would really feel it, like it was good. I remember we were living in, I was living in Haddington Road, and I remember what my wages were, £4.19 and a penny a week, and I was paying £4 a week in my digs, and you say, well, how did you survive?
Yeah.
Well, I survived because the tips were very good in Searson, so we made a living out of it doing that. So, yeah, it was...
What age were you then? What age would you have been then?
I was about 17, I'd say.
Right.
About 17, yeah, about...
How did you feel that, you know, you were leaving where you lived down in Mullingar, and now you were on up to Dublin? Was that hard?
Well, it was hard. I didn't like leaving home, but I actually liked Dublin, Joe. I loved it, really. There was a certain amount of independence when you left home, I suppose. So from that point of view, I enjoyed it, really. But I won't particularly say that I enjoyed the work, but I enjoyed the bit of freedom it gave me, and independence it gave me, and, you know, I didn't mind it,
you
really.
Didn't mind,
it was good.
So the call, you decided to head off to England. Whereabouts in England did you go to?
I had a brother living in England. He had, the eldest of the family had gone to England a good few years before that. So he lived in a place called Tunbridge Wells, which is down in Kent.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I headed, down there to be to work with his company. I worked for the infamous Murphy outfit in England, which was very well known back then. There were two brothers, Kerry men. One company was involved in gas mains and stuff like that, and they were known as the Greys and the Greens. And the Greys are the ones I was with, and we were involved in laying electricity cables on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really, really tough work, you know. It was backbreaking stuff, really.
Yeah.
And
what did the Greens do?
The Greens did gas mains.
Okay.
And they were involved in all kinds of gas mains and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we were strictly, even though he had a steel fabrication company, the Grey Crowd, I wasn't involved in anything like that. The particular arm that we were involved in was laying electricity cables on the ground, pulling big rolls of cable.
Mm-hmm.
It was really hard work, Jerry.
Hard work, yeah, yeah. You were involved in the underground electrical cables.
Yep.
Laying them. And I would imagine, like, you're not talking about a little roll that you'd buy up in the hardware store.
No, you're not. You're talking about big rolls of cable that had 250 yards of cable. And the lower the wattage of the cable, strangely enough, the bigger the cable was.
Mm-hmm.
High tension cables are quite small, but the low wattage ones were really thick cables, and you had to pull that. It was on a kind of rolls of these things, and
yeah,
winter time, if it was frozen, you'd have to light a fire under it to kind of
to soften it up, get it
soften
going.
It up and,
right,
and try to
autos. Yeah.
But there'd be about 10 or 15 of us pulling this cable,
yeah,
from one end of the trench to the other. It was really, really tough
backbreaking stuff.
Backbreaking stuff,
yeah.
Right, yeah,
yeah. And how long were you doing that for?
Well, I did that for about 2 years, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one day I was out on the job and I got a very bad pain, and I was quite young at that time, really. As I said, it was about 17 or 18. And I got acute appendicitis, and there was a friend of ours living over there, and who was a nurse. And she said, you know, you need to go to hospital because it sounds like appendicitis to me. So I went to the Kent and Sussex Hospital and had my appendix out. And after I recovered from that, Joe, I decided I wouldn't go back doing that work anymore. So I looked around and I decided I'd give the bar trade a go. But I just want to tell you before I move on to that, I lived in a place called Southborough, which is between Tunbridge and Tunbridge Wells, with a very, very old lady who was a Greek scholar. The place was about an acre of... The house had no electricity. She had gas lights everywhere, though she had a telephone.
Yeah.
She had no electricity, she had gas lights, which kind of brought me back to my own childhood in a sense.
Yeah.
But she was very good to me and we became great friends. However, I decided I wanted to go into the licensed trade, so... Mm.
Just before you tell us that, when you decided to go across to England to work, you had been up in Dublin, now you're going across to England. How did your family at home feel about that? Were you the first to travel over?
No. My eldest brother had gone to England quite a few years before that, and another brother of mine had gone to train as a chef in Switzerland.
Hmm.
So it was a kind of...
It was expected, was it?
It was the kind of the times we were in, Joe, and it was probably from our house, there was, on our locality, I mean, there were probably three or four houses that had people gone. It just wasn't the living down there, you know.
Yeah.
And it was the norm at the time. You just got on with it and dealt with it, and you wrote letters home and they wrote back to you, and that's how you kept in touch.
That's how you kept in touch, yeah.
You know, so...
And when you, as I say, you were in England and you were working away on the lines there, we hear a lot and we see a lot of documentaries on TV about people that went to England and they've never come home. Like they developed this thing where they went to work, they went back to their digs in the evening, nothing to do, so it was down to the pub.
Yeah, and I was never into the pub scene in England, Joe, but I know exactly what you're talking about. I met some of the most sad cases you could ever meet in England, even back then in my time. I know they're still there, some of those people, but there was very sad cases. There were people who had never gone back home to Ireland, who had never really integrated in England from the point of view of getting involved in social activities. As you said, it was work to the pub. And there were very sad cases there. There were really lonely, sad people.
Mm-hmm.
But I was never into the pub scene there, and I would fight against going to the pub. I used to go around, strangely enough, when I lived in Clapham Junction at one stage. I'm moving on a little bit
if
you don't mind.
Yeah.
I got a job at this stage in the House of Commons.
Right.
And I lived in Clapham Junction. And... strangely enough, I went to the pub one night. There was another Irish guy in the house with me, and he worked in the House of Commons also. So he said, I'm going up to the pub. There's a great band playing up here. So I said, OK, I'll go up and I'll hear this band. And it was a West Indian steel band.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really brilliant. And we actually got to know the guys who were in the band. They were, like, they had been on BBC... to television and all this kind of thing at that stage. They were really good.
Mm-hmm.
So we used to go around with them every Saturday night. They used to go and do gigs in Brixton and all places, you know. So it was good, and we had good fun with them. But, it was a good time. And but Lavender Hill was rough, Joe.
Yeah.
Clapham Junction was really, really a rough area. And we had a terrible experience. At that stage, my brother was back working in the Savoy Hotel in London, and the two of us lived in this house in Clapham Junction, along with a few more Irish people that were there. And I had a break in one night with a guy who lived down below us, and I was out of the house at the time, but he took a never forget it, he took a tape recorder. It was a Grundig TK-400 automatic. I can still remember a big contraption of a thing that would play a tape for 4 hours.
Okay.
It was an amazing thing. But however, to cut to the chase, I went to the police. The police came up, arrested him on a Friday night. He was in the house, and... because I had suspected that he took this thing.
Right.
They got it back for me. He had to pay me £200, but he had said to me that if I went to the police about this guy, because he knew I had a break-in, because he did it himself.
Yeah.
but that if I went to the police, there could be repercussions. Okay. It was a threat, really. So we got the tape recorder back. We barricaded ourselves in the room on the Saturday night after he appeared in court because we suspected he might come and break in. And the next morning, my brother and myself packed our suitcases and literally walked out of the house and started searching on the Sunday for accommodation in London.
We you were so terrified. You were so scared of him.
So scared of him. He really was a vicious kind. The police had told us that.
Right.
So eventually, by sheer chance, we found the most beautiful accommodation in a place called Belgrave Road, mm-hmm. which was a very upmarket place near Victoria Station.
Right.
Not far from Buckingham Palace Road. Beautiful house, beautiful people that own it. And that's where I remained in that house until I came back from England eventually.
Right. Just go back now. We're going to go back to the House of Commons. And we'll just come back to Aidan shortly. But for now, we're just going to take a break. Back with you in 2 minutes.
This is Off the Shelf, your weekend magazine on the radio with Joe Byrne.
And you're very welcome back to the second part of the programme. Don't forget our text number here is 087-6944-500, and you're listening to Near FM online and on 90.3, and we are going to return back now to our interview with Aidan White. What were you doing in the House of Commons?
I was a cellarman in the House of Commons, Joe, but yeah. That was only one of my duties there. I also doubled up as a wine waiter. The House of Commons would have huge banqueting facilities, and every single night of the week and at weekends there would be massive banquets going yeah. on there. You could have up to 300 or 400 people yeah. at a banquet there.
Give us an idea. What year are we talking about here?
We're talking about 1965, 66, 67.
That Harold Wilson's time, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Ted Heath was in opposition.
Yeah.
I used to bring... Ted Heath was a very nice man. He was very fond of malt whiskey. He used to drink Glenfiddich straight malt. So I would have to bring a bottle of malt whiskey up to his office in the House of Commons.
Yeah.
And his secretary, who was a Miss Jolly, would give me tickets for all the stage shows and plays that were on in London.
Yeah.
That I never managed to get to any of them. And she would say to me next week, "Did you enjoy the show?" And I would say, "Yes, it was lovely. Thank you very much." Yeah. And she would give me some other. But anyway, that was just... Yeah, it was an unbelievable place to work, Joe. It was incredible.
What other obviously famous people there? Enoch Powell, was he there at the
Enoch
time?
Enoch Powell was there, yeah. Bernadette McAlisky, as she was then. Devlin.
She would have been just coming
Bernadette
in.
Bernadette Devlin. Yeah. I remember her coming in.
Yeah.
All those, Ian Paisley, all of those people were
all
their,
coming in on
their heyday then back. Yeah. It was an interesting place. But strangely enough, Joe...
It must have been strange for them to come in and they're meeting you and you're sort of an Irishman and that type. Had you ever any kind of odd situations with them?
Well, not really, Joe. But I enjoyed it. It was good. Pay wasn't hectic. It wasn't too bad. But what was good about it is we had 16 weeks paid holiday a year out of it. Mm. Because of Parliament going into recess,
yeah, yeah.
It was great.
Yeah,
it was really good. Yeah. Yeah. So,
how was outside life for you then? Outside of the House of Commons, that your own free time. Did you come up against any problems? The fact that what was going on in Northern Ireland at that time?
Not really, Joe. I didn't because I never went to the pubs.
Okay.
So and quite long hours mm. because Parliament would sit until maybe 8 or 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And if Parliament was sitting, I would be in at 8 o'clock in the morning to work there.
Right.
Stocking up all the bars and making sure that wines were ordered from our suppliers and all that kind of thing. But really, I had very little life outside the Houses of Commons when I was there because of the long hours I was there.
Yeah.
And during the holidays, I would come home. I might work for a while. We were allowed to work part-time jobs during our holiday time from Parliament, but I would come home mm-hmm. To Ireland then.
Yeah.
But so I really had no interaction, but I never found any problems yeah. with And the Troubles of Court had started in 1969. I was still there.
You were still there, yeah.
But no, there was never...
When I'm just thinking of you coming home from your break from the House of Commons, and you arrive back down home, and here's Aidan White, and Aidan is from the House of Commons. Did you become a celebrity down there?
Not really.
Tell anybody where you worked?
Well, I don't think it ever came up, Joe, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
No, there was no... I didn't go home and say, oh, no, I'm working in the House of Commons.
Yeah. No, I don't mean it that way.
You know more than anybody else, Joe, that if you try to be anybody in Ireland, you'll soon get put in your place.
Down the road.
No, there was never... I would spend my time running around seeing all my neighbours and chatting to my neighbours, to be honest with you. And... that's all my life was then, you know.
Okay, listen, we're going to have another bit of music, and this again is your choice. Alan Jackson, The Little Man.
The Little Man, yeah.
Do you know, can you tell us a little bit about Alan Jackson, or where did you come across him?
Well, I listen to a particular radio station every now and again from America, and they're very fond of playing Alan Jackson and Merle Haggard and Johnny Cash and people like that. So I just got to hear this song, Joe, and it's about the small shopkeeper on the corner,
mm-hmm.
hence the little man,
yeah.
and his fight against supermarkets. It's in that vein, and to some extent it's very pertinent to today.
It is, isn't
where,
it?
Where our big supermarkets yeah. are running the little man out of business, but they're still managing to survive yeah. the corner shops, as yeah. we call them, you know. So that's where that came from, yeah.
When I checked it out during the week there, that's the one thing I thought to myself, God, that could be anywhere.
It could be anywhere, yeah.
Anyway, folks, this is Off the Shelf. I'm Joe Byrne, and sitting beside me is Aidan White. And Aidan, we were talking about Merle Haggard there.
Yeah, we were talking about Merle Haggard and Alan Jackson, people like that. Merle Haggard became part of what was known as the Bakersfield Sound. Bakersfield is a town near California, and it was a kind of a place where all the dirt farmers graduated towards there, where there was no work in the farms and things became very hard. So they graduated to Bakersfield, and they created the Bakersfield Sound. The thinking behind that was that country and western music had gone a bit stringy, and there was a kind of smooth orchestras behind these singers like a Jim Reeves and stuff like that, and these guys didn't care for that. So it was Fender guitars and steel guitars and fiddles, and they created that sound, and it became known as the Bakersfield Sound. You had Buck Owens and Merle Haggard and people like that, and so that's how that came about.
Yeah, you're really into your American country music. Excuse me, you obviously listen to all the stations online.
Yeah, I have a particular favourite. It's station WUUQ 93.7. It comes from South Pittsburgh, and they have three stations there. There's one on Lookout Mountain and another in Chattanooga.
Right.
So it would be my favourite. I have it on, like Near FM, I have it as one of my favourite stations. And have to get
that?
A plug in there for you, Joe. And so it's great because you don't have to go fiddling around. It's just there and you press a button. I have a brand new Roberts internet radio that I treated myself to. And I've just about managed to...
Master
the controls on it, so I can go to my favourite stations automatically now, and it's great. Yeah,
excellent. Well, as you said, Near FM is on the switch, and if you want to text in, it's 087-69-44-500. You decided to leave England. You followed somebody.
Now, when I was in London, Joe, in the House of Commons, and it was a beautiful environment, really. I was living in a beautiful environment, and I was working in a beautiful environment.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing that was missing was to meet somebody beautiful that would go with that, tie in with all those kinds of things. Now, I know this is getting very sloppy, Joe, but however.
No problem.
There were two girls from Dublin.
Right.
One who worked in the National Westminster Bank in Holborn.
Mm-hmm.
And another girl who worked for Book Tokens and up beside Buckingham Palace on Buckingham Palace Road.
Right.
Now, the girl who worked in the bank I knew first.
Okay.
And she said that this other girl was coming in, and she thought that you know, that she would suit me, so to speak. So, yeah, right,
was the girl in the bank not interested in you? So you just
no, I think
you
she
on.
Was interested in somebody else. At
oh,
the time,
right, okay.
And she wasn't my type anyway, Joe, to be honest with you. However, okay. No, she was a nice person, don't get me wrong. So anyway, this other beauty arrived in the House of Commons.
Okay.
And I decided that, strangely enough, there was a big outing of this. Once a year we had a big outing. Sports and Social Club took ourselves off to the Isle of Wight for at the taxpayers' expense and had a wonderful day out there. And I was, I met this girl, Irish girl, and on that trip, mm-hmm. and we hit it off fairly well, really, and started seeing each other and in London, and yeah, we got on well together, and. But unfortunately, she decided she wanted to come back to Dublin, and mm-hmm. So there was my.
Your heart was broken.
My heart was broken.
My God.
But I didn't rest on my laurels, Joe. I phoned, and I wrote letters,
yeah.
And she phoned back, and she wrote letters back, and we kept up our correspondence. And 2 years after she came back to Dublin, I decided I'd come back as well.
Right.
So I came back here. Got involved in the licensed trade over here, and 2 years after I came home, I married Geraldine, my wife. And
You're still together after all these years.
And she is my rock, Joe. Ooh. She is now, and I'm not just saying.
I know.
She's a great. She was a wonderful mother. Is a wonderful mother. A wonderful wife, and you know.
Yep.
We get on well together, and I have needed her in my life big time, and I don't regret for a second the fact that I came back. And
good.
She was from Dublin, I'm from Westmeath, and it's been a good combination, really.
And she sorted you out.
She sorted
simple
me
as
out.
That.
She sorted me out big
Give
time.
Give you a clip over to you.
I need, as a friend of mine used to say years ago, Joe, there's only one person wears the trousers in my house, and I'm damn sure it's not me.
Right. Where did you work when you came back here?
I worked in a pub in Santry called The Comet, and I worked in the Cat and Cage. And when I reached the age of 50-something,
mm-hmm.
I'll just say that.
Yep.
I decided I'd get out of the licensed trade. It was becoming quite rough in Dublin, Joe, really.
Yeah.
It wasn't too bad when I came back, but I decided I wanted a total new direction in my life. So I went to work as a baggage supervisor for Ryanair at Dublin Airport.
That was
and I
completely
stayed
different, yeah, go
completely
ahead.
Different. So I stayed with them for 7 years and retired at 65. And had a great time. I loved Ryanair. It was brilliant.
Good time.
There. It was a great place to work. No one ever bothered you. Do your job and that was it. And
yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. Well, we're nearly out of our time. And I know also that you, because I've come across you from time to time, you're a very interesting guy to talk to. But you do tremendous work for the Vincent de Paul, as do some of your colleagues. And that's where I came across you.
I want to just, first of all, thank you, Joe, for having me in, and I've enjoyed it very much. But I just want to say a quick hello to Geraldine, my wife, who I love very much, who's listened to me. I want to say hello to Sheila and Jimmy Coffey and Sean and Daniel down in Mullingar, Emer and Dell in Dublin, Mairead, who out in Malahide. I hope she's listening out there. And my two sons, Donal and Fergal. And again, Joe, thanks for having me in, and
you're
I
welcome.
Really appreciate that.
You're welcome. And with all this knowledge that you have of country and western music and everything else, I'm sure there must be a slot here somewhere for you at Near FM.
Oh, God.
And you should look into that.
Well,
I'm
looking at you, Joe, this morning, and I just cannot get over how you managed to knit all this together. It's an incredible job you're doing here. It's you're putting on music, you're zapping in ads, you're playing records. I don't think I'd have the technical ability to do this. I envy you, to be honest with you, but it's great.
I'm just a chancer, that's all.
Well,
I'm just a chancer.
So.
And there you go. And as I say, that was our interview with Aidan White, and just nearly 3 years ago. So yes, indeed, Aidan, if you're listening, thanks for coming in then, and we do wish you and Geraldine well.